3D6 down the line.
Okay, that is episode 62 in the books. Welcome to the detox.
Good I gotta episode, say, guys. This Deus Ex Machina, where John has been taking it easy on us for an entire year, is really getting a little old.
My worry too was like I wanted the king to be able to provide you substantial rewards, and it was such a inundation of good shit. But it is really all because of, you know, over a year of real time of actual effort, actively helping the goblins out, you know. So
it's huge, and
yeah, it was worth it.
Yeah, I think it was. So, literally, we put a lot into him. Go ahead, Matt.
And so much of it was just like pure accident and pure self-serving greed, right? Mm-hmm. We just hated those halflings. Sure. They were just dicks.
Yeah, that's not right? That's not the way that they see it. You know, they thought that, like, the way the king sees it, he's like, you guys put Dalton's darlings in there as some sort of prop, you know, and like it was easy pickings, and they're like, good job, you guys.
I'm not going to question his logic. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. I am.
So there was in my mind, the way I kind of extrapolated how the king would view things is that he was going to reward you with most things based on what you had already done with the scouring of the Shire. And the return of, so you did three big things. You scoured the Shire, you brought back his team, and you provided him with a heap load of gold. All he was expecting was the first two before you arrived on the scene, and he had a number of gifts that he was going to give you because of that. It was the massive amounts of gold that rolled over everything possible. So it's hard to kind of tell because, you know, I knew as John that you would be bringing the gold, but the king didn't know that. Right.
Sure. So, and I think, sorry, Mike, did you want to say something first?
No, I was saying, right. Yeah, I understood.
No, I agree. And I don't have anything particularly insightful to say other than, like, I think it's worth noting, like you said, that we put a lot of energy, accidental or not, into the goblins and the growth of the goblins. But even like, the Soladai, the heist going as well as it did for a lot of planning and stuff like that, was a huge success, but a success that didn't come luckily, right? Or easily. It just so happens that we succeeded, right? So yeah, giving that to the Goblin King, I think, and having a lot of awards come back to us is like very well earned. I don't know. I mean, I don't
want
to be.
Yeah. I didn't want you guys
egotistical, but yeah. Yeah.
Well, I didn't want you to doubt yourselves that you would have gotten anything. You would have gotten everything without giving him the gold. You would not have. The gold put it over the top, and you got, I'll just be honest with you, the only reason you got the teleportation squares is because of the gold.
Right. Oh, and that's so huge. I mean, with the complicate, like, the, you know, the heist was so successful, but it came with this complication, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the surface right now is extremely dangerous for us, but we now have, we don't know the combination to it, but there's that circle in the ruins of the palace, right? Mm-hmm. That we found so long ago. So at least if we find ourselves up on the surface, we have a quick and easy way to escape.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We also have a teleportation circle on Garlad's level.
Don't I know it, brother?
You've come across a lot of them. It's just they've just been sort of glossed over because you had no ability to use them.
Those are the two I can remember, and I'd have to go through our notes to find out where we found the other ones.
Yeah, you've seen a few.
What I like about the system, whether this is Richard's doing or you're doing, John, or some combination of the two, is we just got really important assets, but they are an engine, not a location, right? And since, as we've talked about many times, information really is the key. It's never physicalized, right? It's the knowledge that really gets us to places, not necessarily like the whatever metaphor I could use. And it's so fun to get something powerful like this and have it still be a prompt, not an answer. It's telling us, well, you better go out and adventure more and find more, you know, like blue tile codes. You better find the cipher that you need, which is like forward momentum that feels really good. Yeah. I don't feel like it's a conditional reward. I feel like it's a great reward, but it's not finalizing. It doesn't like disincentivize me to continue. Like, I don't like, well, I got the good thing, I'm done. Instead, I'm like, hell yeah, let's build, right? And I think that's a really good feeling to engage in as a player, you know?
Definitely. It's a thing that it's a gift that opens up more of the dungeon to you, which I think is great.
But only through more work, right?
Yeah.
And more importantly, it takes away that that fear, that hesitation that we might have about, well, you know, in the that last delve that we had when we took that fire portal and we were so far away and didn't know any way to get back and we were lost. Mm-hmm. Now, as deep as we can get, right? Like, which is, and that Arden level, you know, the Cult of Arden level is probably the deepest that we've seen. And Lady Clementia's Asylum. All of those. I mean, remember we thawed out that teleportation circle there too, mm-hmm. right? So now we can go there and we can come back here and sleep.
Oh, do you know
just like that.
We have to figure out the address for that.
But I would also say, circle though. We have it. It's in writing.
That's
the one we got in the library.
Which one do you have?
We have Isocritus had a sequence for Lady Clementia's Asylum in the
home. In his book. Right. Yeah.
We have to go cross-reference it, but presumably that's the one we thought of. We got that. We just didn't use it to get there.
Yeah. To right? be clear,
we just were aware of it.
Go ahead. Lady Clementia's Asylum, which when you went to the fire portal, it transported you right to that teleportation circle, remember? Which is the one that you're talking about, right?
Was that not a blue tile circle?
It was. What I'm saying, though, is that you're only associating that with the Lost Chambers of Arden because of that strange secret door that you ended up, like you were on the hunt for the regalia. Yes. You were in some, remember? And then you went to a different level. So the level of Lady Clementia's Asylum is not the same level as the Lost Chambers of Arden.
Yes. Which is really crucial because a big, not to like redress our past conversations too much, but a big part of our conversation was like, I guess it's meta, but like, where's the verticality there? If there's a progression per se, what's the progression? Is Clementia's the next step past the cult, for instance? And I think there's a sound argument to say that it is. In other words, like resolving the cult level may not be necessary if we already have access to Clementia's, but neither here nor there. I think, I lost track. I was going to say something else earlier. I don't know. Someone else jump in and I'll remember in a second.
Well, we did that whole Halls of Arden area backwards is kind of like your point. We should have gone through the other door and then ended up in the asylum.
Yeah.
Yes.
After we discovered the rings from Eustace and all the rest of that and used it to access all the doors and all the rest of that. But you know, us being us, we can't do it the easy way.
Can't do the easy way.
This is incredible though.
Also like the thing, the big mystery that I had the whole time that we were on that Cult of Arden level that we never, ever had the chance to check out is what happens when you go back up those stairs, mm-hmm. right? We know that there was a secret door to come down. It closed. 100%. There was an audible click, and we don't know if that was a one-way door. It kind of doesn't matter now, though, because we can teleport, we think, back to the asylum and go down to if we want to. Right.
Guys, we have some major decisions to make here about what our next steps are. Garlad's level is completely like weird and like we don't know what the hell's happening there. Sad trusty wandering around. Maybe that's over now. Maybe next time we peep in the door, they'll be full of monkeys. We don't know. We got that.
I do want to resolve that. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got the King's mission, which kind of sounds like it might be a little bit on a time frame, right? Like it sounds like he might just be a little bit like, you know, I did this thing for you and now you have to do this thing for me. And we might need to do that. And then the other thing is, David, you're champing at the bit. What do you have to say?
No. Go. I'm excited. I get excited hearing you because you excite me. Go, baby. You're fine.
Mike excites us all.
The third thing is the regalia. You know, like the regalia, man, and we can go there and we can go talk to Frost Queen, or we never got through that one door right at the top of the stairs. And for all we know, you open that door up and bang, Lady Alexia is like, you know, whole outfit is there. We don't know.
You see a sign that says you beat the game. Congratulations.
Speaking of regalia, don't forget about the black.
You won D&D.
And the butt note. We can't forget the butt note.
The butt note.
The anal wreckage note.
Couple thoughts, Mike. Yes, absolutely by the Beastmen. There's both potentially a timer with the King's patience. There's also a timer like we talked about with the Beastmen being in a kind of like a hot war with them a little bit. we don't want that conflict to grow too much, right? So there's a necessity to bring peace there, because we don't want that no man's land to push in either direction too much, or our haven's in threat.
Yeah. So regardless of what the king's mission is, it behooves us to like staunch that wound, means that maybe what we should do next. But the other thing I was going to say,
one more thing that I forgot on my list.
Yeah, go
fixing the weird goblin that's going to wander around spreading rumors. Like, that sounds
what's hilarious. There you go.
I was trying to tee you up a little bit. If the beast, I was going to see if the king gave you permission to kill the beastman leader if we didn't succeed, but it sounds like that's a no. So I don't think we should do it. But,
no, you can kill the beastman. He's just disavowing. If the beastmen try to say like it was. You were agents of the goblins, he's gonna be like, I never knew those fucking guys.
Okay, fair.
You know
what I wasn't clear about, not that you have to clarify, we can do it in game, but I wasn't clear about if that also meant like he would redact his, you know, havening of us.
That's
like,
what I words,
we're, too. We're too hot an item, we're too we have too much heat on us for him to still like keep us around. I wasn't sure about
it. All depends on like what the circumstances are, how badly you
I mean
are.
I'm sure we could screw up anything.
If I know anything about us.
Well, the other thing, too,
go ahead, David.
Sorry.
Because I don't want it to necro too far in the back. The only thing I was going to say about the tile things that occurred to me, which is abstract, but a big problem we've had, or not problem, but like influence, right? If we get in deep, which we often have, like from the beginning, whether it be Plunger Town, whether it be the Fire Portal, it's often that we found because information is so tight and the dungeon is so labyrinthine, right? We end up somewhere and we don't know if we could safely get out or not, and we don't know if we can backtrack or not, etc., etc. So generally when we're adventuring, if it gets a little too hot, the safest possible decision is to turn around. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about the portals, that doesn't mean it's a safer option. What's interesting about the portals is we can probably with some confidence know that on a level, a portal might exist. And the safest way may be through now instead of back, if we're confident we can find a portal. That doesn't mean we can, but it adds a new layer to the decision-making, which is really interesting to me. It's a bit of a gamble's risk, but it's an interesting... Go, both of you, yeah.
Locate object.
Locate object spell. Yes. There you go, baby. That's what...
Exactly.
Now that we have a complete set of tiles, Matt can be like, I'm looking for a red one now and just wander around until maybe a red one pings. Like, I'm just like, we might be able to get more than one set of tiles out of this whole thing, which would be pretty amazing too.
And beyond tiles, like David was saying, like when we get lost, when we're in trouble, ping locate object on the circle itself or on one of those, on the tile, the thing that you put the tiles in.
Which I love because we talked about this a lot with like the meta of the game, the psychology of the game. It doesn't actually make us safer. It doesn't mean the risk is less per se. I mean, although knowledge is useful, but what it does do is it calms us because we have more options. So if we get into a situation in which we're really stressed and locate option is an option, right? It does give us a knowledge confidence that will make us go, okay, let's appraise before we like react too strongly, which is awesome, dude. It's so awesome. Go ahead, Matt.
There's another benefit to this that we haven't mentioned, and I want to bring this up. Remember when we were on the Trials of Arden, the Cult of Arden level, and you wanted so bad to go into that treasure room that was off of where we first awakened Eustace, and I kept saying, like, dude, even if you go in there and get all this treasure, we can't carry it. We were fully loaded, anything more out. Now with the teleportation tiles, we don't have that problem anymore. We can come out, dump it here, we have a safe place, we can go back, and we can we can get the treasure out, which it's has huge. Been a real problem, not finding treasure, but having to sort, like, is this, what's more valuable here, we already have this much, and That's a huge solve. A huge solve.
We do need to go talk to that abyssal exalted Lady Sorrow and go find out how these things work, because you know, like, we don't know the mechanism. Do we leave tiles behind when we go? Do they come with us? Like, what other addresses will she provide?
We got twine. Don't worry about it. We got twine. one other thought occurs to me here that is very left field, but I'm thinking in the locate object. I'm looking at, not looking at the spell, but within that logic. A really interesting feature of our sentient sword is that it gives you a visual supercut of the experience of multiple, or at least mostly the night, I guess, but multiple locations and interactions. I don't know how we could game that per se, but the requisite of locate object is a visual, it's in a mind thing. And now I want to give that sword to Avaricios immediately, even if he can't use it, right? Like, as a weapon, using it as a,
so I can see things to locate.
Mental asset, almost is more useful than a weapon to me, because now I'm going, shit, if you can access the memories of this guy, you technically have, in my mind, and John can disagree, please, but you have a visual. If you can perfectly picture it in your mind, is the rule. Holy shit, what can that do for us?
Right? I don't know, David. You might need to be careful that, that whole vignette with the sword wasn't like just like a storytell thing, as opposed to like an actual mechanic of the sword, right?
It's only supposed
to relay empathy. It's only supposed to relay emotional content.
That's true. It's not visual so much as emotional, is something right. that John did. Right? Though we were getting locations is the thing. There was a very specific locational aspect of it. But fair. I think that's something to maybe discuss another time. But I know it's interesting. I'm just thinking about conversations like this, again, not to beat a dead horse, but have really engaged a part of my brain, thanks to Arden Vool. But like, and like, what, again, is information? What is useful? The fire portal is a good example, right? Like, knowing of a location with an asset like that fundamentally changes what the existentially changes the reality of a space. Go ahead, Matt. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking back to, like, we've got so much, you know, not just treasure and these valuable transportation tools, but also information from the king. So we got one thing confirmed that we never knew before, which was kind of the real role of the trolls, right? Like, the trolls, he confirmed, are kind of the most powerful faction,
the real controller
in the dungeon, right? Didn't know that before. That was a theory, maybe, right? But now we know. You know, that's knowledge that we can use.
I will say this: reaction to that
should be our next stop, because if we got this information just from like the leader of the goblins, imagine what information we're going to be able to just pick up in the troll markets, just about areas. We might be able to connect parts of the map that we never even were realizing we're on the same level, or like, et cetera, et cetera. There's an opportunity here to really fill in some of those blank spots of our knowledge.
Yeah. And not to give us a hard time, but you know, it provokes an interesting thought, Matt, when we're talking about this, which is like, what information do we take for granted and what don't we? The concept of an elevator in a mega dungeon tells us a lot about the control that faction has in a way that I didn't think about till now, which is moronic of me, right? Like, it's an elevator where the hardest thing to do is to ascend and descend, and if a faction controls a mechanism to do so, it should be pretty clear that faction is powerful. And I'm just like, oh yeah, the troll elevator, right? Like, I'm treating it as like another waypoint rather than like a big tell, right? Which is really interesting, again, in how I'm going to start reappraising the words, the specific words that I'm engaging with in this design. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it, man. It's very fun.
I would like to, at the next session, like, if we can't engage with these two, what was the phrase John used? Varumashi?
Varumani.
We should engage with them on some level just to get like an idea of like what the troll people are kind of like all about, right? We might be able to, what's their technology level? What's their knowledge of magic? What's their physical capabilities? Just like in general, like you hear troll and obviously we all think D&D trolls, but these are obviously not the same as the big D&D trolls, right? They're like a different thing.
Very different. Yep. So,
well, and I also say, although it, clearly the trolls, at least within the dungeon, have a form of hegemony, right? They have power. So maybe they're not in a political sense, a minority group, But what was interesting about learning about the goblins historically, and what we can only discover more of, is like, what's the relationship between like the dungeon races, mm-hmm. loaded as that term is, and like the above ground races? And if there's a history of any sort of subjugation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, how does that influence who we advocate for, what we assume, et cetera? And the goblin has a bit of a, like a union or a mob boss vibe to them. I'm rooting for them a lot more all of a sudden, right? Like, I mean, no one who's watched us for any period of time is surprised by me saying that. But there's a lot of truth there. It's very exciting. Not that it validates any of my like joking suspicions. I have no, like I said, real feelings about Alexia. I just play into it as a bit. But there's a relationship here. Everything's political, right? What is the relationship then versus now? Mm-hmm. Why are there Azure Shield here? Maybe it's a better relationship than it used to be. Like, who is here and why is a huge aspect that we should explore next session, maybe before we go anywhere, because there's right. a lot of different types here. And that tells us a lot about what we call like the like equilibrium state of this. That isn't to say it's all peace, but like the deals that they have, the advocacy and the ambassadorships that they have is very informative to us.
Well, David, frankly, the next step for us, maybe not the next, and maybe it's two steps down the road, is to go from being players for other factions to being a faction unto ourselves, right? Like that involves territory and that involves relationships with the other factions, where even if it's not dominant, it's safe, right? And I still think that we can carve out that whole like Halls of Arden area into a very like potent like base.
100% you know? Agree. 100% agree. Two other thoughts to add to it. One is the Goblin Scepter. I don't want to rock our relationship with this guy anytime soon, for what it's worth, because I think it's really valuable and earned it, and it would be foolish to start like undermining it. Although I think it's probably useful to go talk to the snot noses or the black snots. But and the problem is we're gonna go meet them and be like, oh, I'm on their side, but I have to like really resist that impulse.
Right, yes,
but the other thing, and this is probably a bridge too far, or this is probably a bit of a leap, but there is a whisper in the back of my head right now about the recurrent theme of like tokens of regency, the regalia, literally, right? And whether they're purely symbolic or they have any like greater magical or otherwise import. And that like Alexi is looking for this, and that the goblin is looking for a version of it that's basically mythologized to even him at this point. Right. And that doesn't mean the regalia and the goblin scepter are the same thing, but what if it were, right?
Yeah.
What if this is a singular item mm-hmm. that like everyone in the dungeon is pursuing? Probably not. But this theme of like what proves I am, you know, the God King in a very Byzantine sense, right? Like sorry, go ahead, John.
I was gonna say that's a very important thing to pick up on, the fact that two people in positions of authority give weight to these items to validate their authority, right? But the thing is to look carefully at which two that you've discovered are doing that, right? Like Lady Alexia puts value in the regalia. It kind of makes sense in a Byzantine fashion. I don't want to give too much away, but you should look back on like your conversation that you had with Skeenum, and why in particular does he himself also value this gear, you
know, and that he doesn't know exists. Yeah.
And like the level of whether he believes there's any importance imbued upon it, or if it just like negates competition, right, is very significant in that. This is a bigger conversation maybe than we have time for. But yeah, it's a very interesting thing we should talk about.
Sort of think about like how he views, it's tied into, like a hint, basically, is like it's tied into how he sort of views the Beastmen, how he sort of what he told you in secret,
exactly,
about how he admires them, how he admires their imperial discipline. You know, that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. So I mean there's a very much a like meritocratic aspect to this that even ties to, even though he's got kind of the soprano voice, it relates to their mm-hmm. sounds like prior sort of servitude. There's a lot of like, go ahead, Matt, sorry.
Yeah, well, one of the things that strikes me is that there's this lack of knowledge about what these things really even are. Like, yes, they know that something exists. There's a lack of the knowledge of what they are. Yes. It makes me wonder if the platinum rod that the guard risk scheme.
I love what you're saying.
He may not even know what that is.
Exactly.
It's a pretty thing. That may be the other part of this. There could easily be like five of these things. There might be a copper one and a silver one and a gold, you know, and all together these make the, you know, whatever magic thing.
Dude, Matt, yes. And the asymmetry of knowledge that we experience, presumably everyone else in the space does, which is exactly what we're picking up on. So the platinum rod might be the scepter, right? Whatever that means to the Goblin King. And it's sitting in front of him. That'd be a very fun thing to do in a design, right? But like, hidden in plain sight. But it could be a million things. There could be symbolic effects. There could be primary. If it's a magic item, let's say, there could be a primary effect. There could be a secondary, tertiary effect. The tertiary effect might be like cats like us. And that's the cat rod to them. And what we don't know is it's like all beasts under the domain of the God King Byzantium, you know, cow to us. And like that is only something that can be discovered through testing and everything else, and knowledge and libraries, like it's that are on Plunger Town that we haven't fully explored still, which is why it's like huge. And we're like the God phone and asking some questions, et cetera, et cetera.
Another key thing that will kind of slot into place for you guys is if you discover what was the use of the chambers that the goblins now inhabit. Right, I made a point of kind of saying that everything's sort of been obscured by smoke, or damaged by smoke, or fallen to pieces. But everything is very, very well made in Arcantian, and it's not like the goblins carved out this space. They've burrowed outwards to create like their clan holds and stuff like that. But the core space was pre-existing in Arcantian. So you, it might behoove you to find out, because Richard Barton being Richard Barton, right? There's always the question you should be asking is, why are there goblins here in the first place?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And I was off my mark, but part of the reason I was asking about like wagon tracks wasn't necessarily even like, oh, there was a tunnel from Gossrook originally that came here, but like, and this is far-fetched, but like, oh, there are plenty of examples in real life, right, of superstructures built over each other over millennia, which is to say that this floor could have been the surface at some time. That doesn't mean it is, but that's a very, like, from an archaeological standpoint, it's a thing, right? And so the layer cake of that is its own interesting. I think, again, I missed my mark there, but even the geography, in other words, of the plateau as a natural object may not be what we think it is.
That's why I think that if the scepter is going to be kind of like our next maybe like point, I think actually going to the troll markets to find this goblin that's out running her mouth is probably the first thing to do, right? Because she has knowledge about it, he thinks. Also, does the Goblin King still care about having the scepter if the person who's vying for his power is eliminated?
No, probably not. Right? I mean, I think he... Sorry, go ahead, John.
You can't say anything.
Oh.
I think I might have cut John off though earlier. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, it's all good.
No, it's a great question.
We do need to wrap it up, but I'll leave it with this real quick. You should... When I say like not only the architecture, like what the former function is, but kind of putting yourself in... knowing how the dungeon is designed, the fact that I've, since day one, actually, since you've ever encountered goblins, the fact that the goblins, I've always been careful to describe the goblins as not imperial goblins, that they are a debased form, right? But that yet they are aware of imperial goblins should lead you to a conclusion about the fact that they've been here for a long time, right? So So you have to, once again, ask yourselves, why are the goblins here? And why do they take the form and the culture that they do right now? And also ask yourself about that, about every other group of factions and species that you've seen here. Why are the baboons there? Right. You might have intimations about why Garilad's there, but what are the baboons doing there? Right. What are the Varumani doing there? You know, like what's cool about, what's so great about this, one of the great things about the module is that unlike a lot of funhouse dungeons and stuff like that, there really is a reason for everything. And it's,
yes,
you know, it's very impressive.
It's phenomenal. Right. Yeah. And I don't have like a profound response to that other than to say that, like, yeah, it's to punctuate what you were saying, like imperial goblins, right? Versus goblins who have a history of servitude. What does that mean in like a political sense historically in terms of conflict or allegiances like that? Well, blah, 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 blah.
The imperial goblins are specifically a servitor class within the empire. They were in the past, and they are today as well. You know, they're free citizens now, right? But they're generally they are relegated to service sort of places. Yeah.
And what I would spring on that, and you guys may disagree with me here, but I think it's an interesting conversation both internally to us in the context of Ardenvale and in the context of like D&D culture, which is like, because this is not a funhouse, because this is like a very informed an intentionally designed space. There is an argument to be made, right? Without like going and picking up the Ardenvale books, to meta knowledge being significant to how much depth you can engage in within the dungeon itself. Now, that doesn't mean we all need to go out like and buy a Byzantine history book, but I don't think there's a spectrum there. Like, I don't think it is, this is me expressing my opinion, a bad thing to have an understanding historically, culturally, etc., of what you're engaging with, because it is very academic in that way, which is like its best quality, but it also makes it a very difficult quality if the way you're engaging in a dungeon is just like, I'm going to kill monsters in a dungeon, right? Mm-hmm. Even like Lady Lecomintia's estate, we speculated a lot about. I really overspeculated on our private Discord, probably to no end, right? But like about like the architecture of a Roman estate, literally. And there's a lot of hints there. Whether that actually leads to any useful conclusions to us, it is enriching to know that there's something there. But also, we know Richard well enough to know that there's probably some Easter eggs or some lead lines there, some things that will help us draw conclusions quicker if we engage with if we call the primary source the actual history, right? If we engage with the primary source, which is really exciting. It's
also dependent on how much I'm picking up on it, though.
No, of course. I'm not saying we like suddenly like because we know Byzantine history, we have like a fucking key to the whole dungeon. I don't think that's the case. I don't think it would be that literal. All I'm saying is it gives us a form of context that's very empowering, but I don't think, which is why I used meta as a term, it is detrimental to the game to think in those terms. It's not like breaking the narrative, in other words. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, but think also spaceships.
Yeah, dude.
Robots. It all goes out the window.
This is the whole thing. This is so brilliant, though. This is why doing the ancient alien things is so great, because you have a professional who's like, everything has a reason, and then he puts a fucking, it's so comedically, it's just great. I'm not going to go ranting because we're over time, but I love it. It's fun.